exhibition at the library for the last 4 years, has known about him from some time, actually through his old little station he had at the ferry terminal, I believe in Victoria, where he was selling his artwork. And she's been following his career throughout some time and thought it was a great moment to bring him in and have him showcase at the library. And yeah, I really learned about his artwork and his practice and his history and presence through this exhibition and doing the research for it.
Mm-hmm. What was the collaboration process like with Chris Paul? You know, how were certain decisions made, whether that be like what gets displayed or how it gets displayed? How did that work?
One way actually that's really funny is because his artwork is so often bought, a part of it is like, what could we get? Because it's just so, like, once he makes it, it is usually out of his hands, like, very soon. And so he had some of these very important pieces that he had not wanted to sell, such as To Fishes Formerly, which had to do with Nicholas Claxton's dissertation. And that's a glass piece with fish and salmon, is talking about reef nets and the Douglas Treaties and Wasanich rights to fishing and reef nets. And so he had felt uncomfortable selling that piece and wanted to donate it. So that's how that one naturally came in. And the others were supplied through the Mark Laurier Gallery. Mark represents him and has represented him for quite some time. And a lot of the decision processes are made on like the space, what we could get, and also talking to Mark about what feels right and like what should be shown in conversation with one another. And yeah, like how to make a cohesive statement and something that the viewers would understand as a collection when they come into the space.
Can you talk about the art a little bit? What would you say like one of your favorite pieces is, and could you describe it a little bit for our listeners?
Yeah, of course. One of my favorite pieces, there's a lot of good ones, but one that I'm thinking of right now is his Swan Sisters silkscreen. And it has these two swans together, and they're very playful, and there's all these salmon around them. And it's just talking about connections between women and sisterhood and how women are just there for each other and the beauty he sees within that. His works have a lot to do with relationships, and I think that's the main piece in the show that hits on matriarchy and the importance of that within Wasanich culture and a lot of indigenous cultures. It's also just very stunning. It's a symmetrical print, and there's a flatness there due to the silkscreen process that allows for all the details he creates and the technical process to really pop out into your eyes.
What's one thing for those who do attend the exhibition, for those who attended the reception, that you hope they take away? You know, one thing when speaking to Chris Paul about this exhibition that I noticed was like a big part of this for him was sort of introducing or making people familiar with Wasanich culture and the way that it relates to Main Island's history. So what's, I guess, one thing that you hope residents of Main Island who may not be as aware of that history take away?
I think one thing I would hope people take away is just the importance of reintegrating and ensuring cultural presence anywhere. I feel like it can be very easy to view certain places as a getaway or as somewhere to visit and then not fully understand the culture that's there, to not understand what has happened in the past to make it the certain island. Maine has a very deep and rich history with the displacement of indigenous peoples and also Japanese farmers. And that displacement has created a scene where things can evolve to today. And there's a lot of things you don't see when you visit the island. And there's a lot of things like you don't see when you can live there as well, unless you put the effort to, because they were made to not be seen. They were made to be invisible through colonization and government displacement. And I think it's just something to remember, is that every place has a story and every spot has a memory there. And Chris talked a lot about blood memory and feeling like whenever he visits Manerskatak, as it's known in the Wasanich language, that it feels like coming home. And Yeah, I think when you look through his artwork and the way he works through indigenous flora and fauna and people, you can tell that this is home, and it reminds you that, like, no matter where you go, you are at someone's home. You know, there's no land that was once empty.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that does a really good job of encapsulating what the sort of ethos of the exhibition is and what he was trying to convey. Yeah, I think those are all the questions I had, but if there's anything else you want to mention about the exhibition that you think people should know about, what would that be?
You can always visit the exhibition when the library is open. Make sure to check the hours online. And we'll also be doing curatorial tours on the 20th and 21st. You can check that out. And we'll also be having a piece at the Longest Day Festival. And the Longest Day Festival is about the sun. And so this piece is about a herring in the sun. And it's called The Sailor's Son, and it's a very bright and yellow-green piece. So if you end up going to that festival, you'll see it there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Riley.
Thank you, Danny.
Once again, that was our interview with Riley Tai, one of the co-curators of the Chris Paul exhibition on Main Island, Rebuilding Connections, Rebuilding Our Connections, Walking in Our Ancestors' Footsteps. The exhibition was curated by Riley Tai, as well as Jennifer Iredale, Mark Loria, who you heard earlier, and Tina Farmillo. One thing that I wanted to bring up as well before we stop talking about this exhibition is just some of the things that Paul had said beforehand that I thought were really noteworthy. One of which saying that one thing he says here is that we as Native people were rarely ever stoic. We were rich in food and culture, and our language rolled off our tongues like sweet talk, and we were known for gatherings and our giving. It made us rich to give, and our leaders gave the most, noting that our history and our story are part of something that's today. Later on, speaking about his own work, Chris Paul said that, "I think it's sort of the best thing that you can ask for is if any of your art, or for any of your art, is if people actually pause in front of it for a moment." So, Main Island, a single ferry from Tawasin, not too much of a drive, and then you go up to the community library and you'll be able to see this exhibition. It's a beautiful, beautiful exhibition. It's a beautiful island, so there's a lot more to do. At the very end of our interview, Riley Tai mentioned the Longest Day Festival, which is happening June 20th to 21st. I believe it starts at noon and then on the 20th and then ends the next day on the 21st. Food is provided, and there's a lot of local acts that are either local to the Gulf Islands or to Maine. And it seems like it's going to be just like a very cool time. Maybe we'll do some coverage on that, but that is yet to be seen. All right. Again, thank you so much to Chris Paul, to Jennifer Iredale, to Mark Loria, Riley Tai, and Tina Farmillo for having CJSF over on the island and being such gracious hosts, showing us around, and for this exhibition. That being said, we have about 22 minutes left in this hour. So let's keep it going. We're going to take a bit of a music break before we get into the next news piece of the hour. This one is from Chopping Spree. It's titled Catch Yourself. Right, all you gotta do is ask.
you at your best. Trust in everything is the key to happiness. Don't think about the repercussions to your consciousness. Focus on the love you're fed. Oh, remember what you need. Don't trust all that you see. Yourself.
Once again, that was Chopping Spree with Catch Yourself. You're listening to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM with your host, Danny Nesvedarani. Before we get into the next piece, let's play a couple of informational PSAs for this hour.
This is Bird Note. What a comfort it would be to legions of birders if every bird song were as easy to recognize and remember as that of the olive-sided flycatcher. Take a walk in the mountains of the north or west in summer, and you're likely to hear the olive-sided flycatcher's blithely whistled three-note song. Bird ID guides have tried to capture its pattern and quality with such catchphrases as quick three beers or what peeves you. The bird's behavior also makes it easy to get to know. It perches conspicuously, bolt upright, high in the tops of dead trees. Then it sallies out to snatch flying insects. The olive-sided flycatcher is gray with a peaked crown and dark vest, and it stands about 8 inches tall. And though it favors the edges of mountain forests, this migratory flycatcher also nests in small numbers in green belts and parks. It was once a common breeder in western forests, but the bird's numbers have declined in recent decades. The reasons are unclear, but loss of trees where it winters, some 4,000 miles away in South America, may be a leading cause. Do you drink coffee? You can help olive-sided flycatchers when you choose to drink shade-grown coffee. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note's newsletter delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox. Sign up at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In February, under the Trump administration, the Environmental Protection Agency announced the repeal of its endangerment finding. This finding provided the legal basis for regulating climate pollution under the Clean Air Act.
I was dismayed, and as a mother and a grandmother, I couldn't imagine that the EPA would take that position.
Almeda Cooper of the nonprofit Moms Clean Air Force worries about how this will affect kids, because in addition to warming the climate, fossil fuel pollution harms people's health. Children are especially vulnerable because their lungs are still developing. and those in black and brown communities, which are more likely to be located near power plants or highways, bear the greatest burden.
Tailpipe pollution is a huge problem, particularly for chronic diseases such as asthma.
States and environmental groups are pursuing legal challenges, and Cooper's group is urging legislators to oppose the administration's action.
We are not going to give up. We are going to continue to speak up and to do everything we can to make sure that we can protect the future of our children and our grandchildren.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Coming up next on Speak Up, we have a very important piece coming out of Smithers, BC, from our friends at CICK News.
This is CICK News. Monday afternoon, on the frontage road at the corner of Highway 16, the Highway of Tears, and Queen Street in Smithers, a large motorhome pulled over and two people got out of the vehicle, set up two lawn chairs, and waited in the shade. Vanessa Brousseau and her partner drove this motorhome from Timmins, Ontario, to come to BC's North to raise awareness for Vanessa's sister, Pamela Holopainen, who went missing from Timmins in 2003. The sides of the motorhome have posters with the number of the Timmins, Ontario Police Department and photos of Pamela. Brousseau is also known as Resilient Inuk.
Rolling Resilience is a motorhome that I purchased last year. This is my second year coming here to this territory. And I bought it last year in hopes to raise more awareness about missing and murdered Indigenous people, as my sister, Pamela Holopainen, has been missing now for 22 years. A lot of families aren't being heard. A lot of advocates aren't being heard. So I try to go community to community and amplify them and their voice and what they're doing. And then I also get to meet with other families, because that's the hardest part, is being a family member of a missing loved one. A lot of people don't understand.
Hello, everybody. Hi. Thanks for coming.
Nice to meet you, Jackie.
Nice to meet you, Jackie.
I'm Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi.
I'm
Jocelyn.
Hi, Jocelyn.
Nice to meet you.
Sharon.
Hi, Sharon.
So how about you tell us about something about you guys? What's your mandate? What's your mission?
So my mission is, it comes from me being a family member. Just in January, the police approached me for my DNA, because all these years my sister didn't have a DNA profile. And it's not their fault, but it's really nice to be able to meet with other families who do. So that's another part of why Rolling Resilience exists. It's very empowering to be doing what I'm doing, but it's also a lot of hard work. This didn't just happen overnight. And even though I say I just started last year, this is something I've worked really hard on, by healing first, in order to be able to talk to people in a kind way. You know, it's so important for other people to see that, yes, we have traumas, and yes, we have a lot of history, but that doesn't define us. I feel like I've tried many things in advocating, and the one thing I found beneficial was being with the people. I've lived in Ottawa, I've protested, I've attended marches. I shut down Yonge Street in Toronto, okay? I've done all those things, but none of them made me feel like how I feel when I get to connect with community.
Yeah. Where have you gone today? It seems like it's been busy already.
I woke up in Fraser Lake, mm-hmm. and I stopped at Burns Lake.
Yep.
And then I stopped at Houston, and now I'm here in Smithers for the night. But I'm going all the way to Prince Rupert. So last year I was here for a week. This year I'm staying for over 2 weeks, because wow. It wasn't enough. So, and I know maybe next year will end up being a month.
Yeah. And what's your territory, and where do you live? So where's this actually kind of, where's your starting point?
Okay, so my mom is from Sanikiluwek, Nunavut, which is in the Arctic. But she was born and raised in Moose Factory. So I actually was born and raised in Ontario. So this is where my motorhome comes from. I live in North Bay, Ontario now. I've been there for a few years now. But I grew up in Timmins, Ontario, which is a northern community as well as in Ontario. But yeah, I'm just waiting for personalized plates too. I'm going to have the plates that say "For you, Pamela." So I'm really, it's all coming together every year. So
how long does this take to organize something like that?
And all by myself. People don't understand, like, I always post videos every day, but I always believe that whoever you're meant to connect with, just like you today, you'll show up, right? So I just put it out there and put myself out there and hope that people come. And if they do, they do. And if they don't, that's okay too. So,
yeah. So if anyone listening west of us hears this, what do you want them to know? But when they see your motorhome show up,
honk your horn, show your love, pull over, come say hi, get a button, get a postcard, take a picture, post it online. That's how we're making awareness. So, you know, just know that I'm not trying to hurt anybody or take away from anyone. I'm trying to bring. So, yeah.
Was there anything I didn't ask that you think is important to include in this?
I am not funded by grants. A lot of people think that, you know, I'm not funded by any grants, zero. I do this all out of either working hard for myself or by community donating. So I do have a GoFundMe as well. And my website is resilientinukcreations.ca.
Thank you so much, Vanessa.
Thank you.
My name is Jackie Bowes.
We're standing here where Rolling Resilience, the motorhome, is by Vanessa Busso. And you two actually just had a really beautiful exchange where you asked Vanessa, what is her mandate? She told you, and then you shared a story as well. What does it mean to show up and to kind of constantly have to advocate for your own family?
Well, as I was saying that we don't choose to be advocates for the MMIW. We are obligated in this role, and the only way that we can actually challenge the status quo that it's currently in right now is to really make noise, make the awareness, and also just constantly fighting for the justice for our loved ones. We were speaking about how all the MMIW are creating a community to support one another, because when you're reliant on outside entities, you know, it's just, it's basically falling on deaf ears. And that's what we're doing today, you know, like she's traveling and we want to support her. We want to be her ally, and we want to be a community. And when you create that space for understanding, then you start working together in unity, and that's what needs to happen. And I hope that everybody along the route that she's traveling will support her and meet her and greet her and tell your story about your loved one.
Diana Johansson played three songs for Vanessa, including the Wet'suwet'en Women's Water Song, which we heard a small portion of, to wish her safe journey as she continued west from Smithers. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
Once again, thank you to Pam Hassan and CSK News for that extremely important piece on the motorhome Rolling Resilience, which is driving around right now to raise awareness for her missing sister. Coming up next, we have about 6 minutes left. In about 6 minutes, we also have Democracy Now! Playing. So let's keep it going with one last track. This one is titled Hide, and it is by the local band Bloom Effect. Hope you enjoy. Silencios. We are back one last time with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. That last track was by Boom Effect, and it was titled Hide. In about 30 seconds, you're going to be listening to Democracy Now!, so make sure you stay tuned for all of that. Later in the day, we have Raccoon City, then typically Tuesdays, and later tonight, Slumber Party and Bitcoover. Got a lot of amazing live programming here at CJSF every day, so make sure you're always tuning in. Until next week.
How much